Welcome to the Godfathers of Podcasting. Now you might be asking,
why are they called the Godfathers of Podcasting?
Well, that's because they've been podcasting since before podcasting was even called podcasting. Archives of this show are available on every major podcast provider. You can find entire episodes in video format and killer merch on their website, godfathersofpodcasting.com. To share your feedback, drop them an email at info@godfathersofpodcasting.com. Send a text anytime to 437-375-2000. Now, here are your hosts, two guys that have been broadcasting online since 1996, the godfathers of podcasting themselves, Donnie DeSilva and Chris Tidwell.
What's going on, everybody? It is April 18th, 2024. Like man said, my name is Donnie. And that man over there, well, he's not on screen yet. There he is. That ugly SOB is my boy. He is the Jack Black to my Kyle Gass, the James Hetfield to my Lars Ulrich. He is the Lemmy to my Larry. That's Notorious T.I.D. Chris Tidwell. What up, Tid?
I'm so glad you took the Lars role.
Yeah, I got to be the dick. Let's just call spade a spade.
There might have been a problem otherwise. But thank you for the Lemmy.
Even though,
appreciate that.
Yeah, you get to be Lemmy. But listen, as much as appearances would lead people to think that you're the asshole amongst us, the truth of the matter is you have sort of softened in your old age. You're not as much of an asshole as you used to be, and yet I'm becoming more of an asshole.
Well, you're also like, I don't know, like 10 years younger than I am.
Wow. Not exactly, but sure, I'll take it.
You know what I realized today, bro? I realized today because I was looking at a new house, and I realized today that like this is the year when my birthday comes around this year in November, I can fucking qualify to live in a retirement community. What's up?
You should have told me that.
What's
it's
up?
It's giving nothing but gross snaps until November. You shouldn't have fucking told me that.
Yeah, man. That 55 sneaks up on you real quick. After 50 is a cool thing, though, because you're like, you get to that point where you wait for so long. You're like, you know what? That over 50 thing, fuck it. I can say what I want. You can't say shit about it because what are you going to do? Oh, it's just some old guy spewing garbage, right?
Hold on. I met you when you were like 23 or something. Since when have you not said what you want?
That's irrelevant. I'm an old soul, Donnie.
At 23.
Yeah, I'm an old soul. That's really what it is.
Right. The mouthy prick.
Yeah, well, there's that.
Hey.
Yeah, man.
We were about to get to our guest, but something just came across my screen, actually. Legit. It just came across my screen. I don't know if you saw this. Breaking news.
A little bit of news. Breaking. Current news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news. Breaking news.
From the sports world, the Arizona Coyotes from the NHL are moving to Utah.
That's, I don't know. Is that a move up? Is that a lateral move? Is that a down move to Utah?
I mean, look, the players are going to feel like Tempe, Arizona is South Beach compared to Salt Lake City. Like I've been to Salt Lake City. There ain't shit to do.
Yeah, and is it going to be Salt Lake City, or are they going to be stuck in, like, Ogden or some bullshit?
Or do the Jazz play? I think they're in Salt Lake City, right? I'm assuming they're sharing the arena, more than likely.
It's Utah. I'll ask my brother. He lives there now. Poor soul. But he's getting a hockey team. Good for him.
He's getting a hockey team.
All right.
Follow-up news. Nobody in Arizona noticed.
Or Utah.
Yeah. It's just nobody gives a shit.
Right.
Interesting. We will maybe talk about that a little more later. Probably not.
I hope
nobody cares.
Nope.
Mm-hmm. So without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, it is time right now for the big hello. And this week's guest, he is making his first appearance on this show, and we are stoked to have him. He was born in the tiny town of Muncie, Indiana, and despite the fact that Muncie has fewer people living there than people who attended night one of WrestleMania, there have been a few big names to come out of there, mainly athletes, like Pro Bowl linebacker Ryan Kerrigan, Ball State legend and NBA fan favorite Bonzi Wells, and a guy who played 10 years of pro baseball right here in Toronto, Adam Lind. That is to say, tiny little Muncie has made an impact on the world, but this man might be the best metal front man that that cute little town will ever produce. Back in 1997, his voice was heard on a bunch of mixtapes and compilation CDs, and members of the band Soil thought, that's our guy. Two twos later, he's the front man for Soil, and damn, were they cranking out music that I used to listen to on repeat. My Soil EP ran through the CD player so many times, it looked like a cat had scratched that bitch up. In 2004, he left Soil and decided to do his own thing. And about a year later, he got into talks with the guys from Drowning Pool. Their iconic lead singer, Dave Williams, had passed away at the young age of 30, and the band needed a new face and a new set of pipes. And lead he did. Drowning Pool released a couple of albums with this man as their featured vocalist and did not disappoint. But then, about 7 years after joining Drowning Pool, it was announced that he was leaving and going back to Soil. And today he's still with Soil, but it seems he was longing for that opportunity to go home again. You see, like Katy Perry and Orlando Bloom, like J-Lo and Ben, like Gabrielle Union and Dwayne Wade, he just can't quit Drowning Pool. In March 2023, it was announced he was going on back, and while maintaining his duties in Soil, now he gets to have his wife and his girlfriend. Drowning Pool has had a massive resurgence in 2023 after he rejoined. They're currently working on music. They got a packed 2024 and 2025 with dates all over the place. They're currently on a short 2-week break and then heading back on the road. He's co-headlining a tour with Saliva. Ladies and gentlemen, you're ready for us to go while you're sitting in your homes. He's the loudest common denominator. Ain't no Davy Jones. This man's got talent like his name's Pat Mahomes. Now let the bodies hit the floor. Give it up for Ryan McCombs.
What's going on? What a friggin' intro. Jesus Christ.
Yeah, we're completely out of time now.
Nice knowing you guys. Thanks for the time. Later.
Yes, yeah.
Everyone's
got to have a gimmick, Ryan. That's mine.
Yeah, you just made me realize how screwed up my Wikipedia must look like.
Is that right? What's wrong?
All of it was right. I'm just that my Wikipedia has to be just a fucking mess.
Aren't they all though?
But, like, yeah.
You're like, aren't all Wikipedias just an absolute atrocity, anyways?
They really are. I can't remember. One time mine read that I lost my fingers on my right hand. I lost my fingers from playing the guitar so furiously, so ferociously that I actually lost the digits.
Bro, so, that is a pretty metal way to say it. You know,
what's more metal than that?
I think it's more like I sucked so bad at guitar the fingers just fell off, so I didn't have to embarrass them anymore. But it was. Yeah, I tell you what, I don't even know. It seems like that I've been watching you guys right now for about an hour and a half with the intro. Yeah. Not sure if it was you that said it or for part of the intro that was like, if you're wondering why they're called the Godfathers. And I was thinking that same thing until the picture of me came up. And then all I could think of was, geez, did you guys like look for a while to try to find like a picture that looked more like I was trying to like smuggle a Michelin tire underneath my chin. I'm old. I'm self-conscious of that shit, man. Come on.
We all grow our beards for different reasons, brother.
And the wife's girlfriend comment, dude, that's, I'm going to get in such trouble with that shit.
I mean, listen. Isn't there a metaphor there? You were in Soil. You went to Drowning Pool. Drowning Pool is kind of like your girlfriend, and you broke up with Soil, and now you got both.
Yeah, yeah. My wife's English. She's got one of those dry English sense of humors. I don't know how that's going to sit, really. I'm tuckered a little bit, just wondering how this is going to go.
Well, that's all right. All else failed, he still got drowning pool.
My head up. After seeing that picture, I got to keep it down.
That's right.
I'm doing the whole interview like this. No neck. No neck at all.
I thought that picture just looked so rock and roll, man. I was all over it. Hey, listen, how the hell are you doing? You've been busy. You've been on the road. You've been playing shows with saliva all over the place. How's that going?
Yeah.
Good. Good. That is good, dude. That is the most I have done too much fucking media answer I've ever heard in my life.
No, it went really good. We did about 2 month run. Drowning Pool did about 2 month run with them in Any Given Sin, Adelita's Way towards it was about end of third quarter, beginning of fourth quarter last year. And it was received so well that the powers that be decided to throw us all out on the road again together. And we all get along so well that it's an easy time on the road. And when you're out there for those lengths of time, that's all you can really hope for, is that you get along with everybody crew wise, band wise, and everybody enjoys each other's company, which is exactly what's going on with Saliva and any given sin, man, those are like new family members right there. Those, I was not at all familiar with. I don't mean I am. I live in the dark, and I was not familiar with Any Given Sin, and I know now that I should have been, but got really familiar with them. I got really familiar with them, but no, I got to know the guys, and man, just super good people, and that always means the world to me. So, Any Given Sin and Saliva, as you said, we just finished up that run. We got 2 weeks off now till we finish. We go out and do a third leg, because clearly, you know, we just haven't beaten the shit out of it enough.
Yeah, your joints are still not aching enough, apparently.
Right. Yeah. It's been fun, but at the same time, I flew into the States February 27th for start a run with Soil and Union Underground and Raw and Flaw. And then that ended. I flew directly to Dallas to start recording some new music with Drowning Pool, and then we started the leg of the Snafu tour that we just did. So I actually I got one more show with Soil this coming weekend, and then I actually fly home for the first time. I'll be home for the first time in 2 months. I'm looking forward to that.
Wow. How soon into a 2 month run do you just throw your hands up and go, I'm fucking tired of living out of a suitcase, bro?
It's about the same time that my airplane lands in the U.S.
Yeah.
Day one.
Right.
Okay.
It's a blessing. I want to start. I don't want to come across like I've had whatever. Because it is a blessing to be able to do this, and the fact that people give us the time of day and allow us to still be doing it, it's friggin' amazing. So I'm beyond thankful for that. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of white in this beard here nowadays. I think CJ just came into the room earlier and said he was reading something, and it said something along the lines like, if you were born on this date or after, you're considered a senior now, and we both fell into that category. So we were like, son of, just like, what the fuck? So yeah.
So what you're saying is you and Tit are both looking for retirement homes? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, exactly.
Dude, I get it. It's what live entertainment at Shady Oaks, Tit.
it's what I say to people is like, even when I have to travel to go home and see family, or just travel from when I was doing wrestling and, you know, later on in the years and stuff, it turned into, you love being there. You love performing. You love being in front of that crowd there. But that time between that travel, that hopping on the bus, having to sleep in weird, awkward positions, not, you know what I mean? All of that stuff is like, time out. I can do with all of that. You know what I mean? But being the performing part, so I get what you're saying, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at how long you're on stage, you're talking, depending on the tour, you're talking an hour, hour 15, hour 30, depending on the tour. So, I mean, that's your payoff. That's that hour 15, hour 20, hour 30, whatever it is. That's what makes everything else worthwhile. But man, when you're in the midst of all those, the other what, 23 hours of the day, it's yeah, you kind of, you know, I can't wait to go home and see if my wife will, you know, let me make the sex with her or something. You know, it's
the sex. That's awesome. See, Ted, that's the real reason why, not the neck injury. This is the real reason why you had to retire from pro wrestling, right? It's because Ryan talked about the payoff is that hour and a half on stage. You had 7 minutes per match, and you're like, fuck this.
Bro, what it's am the I making same when I got home.
7 minutes.
It's the same when I got home, too, to do the make the sex. I thought that that was what was going to happen when I retired, but it was 7 minutes, and that was like with a three-minute nap in between. Who are we kidding?
Way to go, dude. I'd have to have at least two sandwiches in there, so.
That's what I'm saying, bro.
Let me ask you this, because you've been doing this for a while, right? We're making all these age jokes, but you've been doing this for a while. When you're on the road and you're performing, at this point of your career, do you give a shit about feedback, either from critics or fans, or is it just like, show's done, next town?
I don't give a shit about feedback from critics. I mean, that's something I've dealt with for years. I mean, you learn right away. You learn right away that you're not going to please everybody, and I'll get to hell whether you're wasting, you learn that pretty quick. You know, you're wasting your time if you're trying. And if you are pleasing everybody, then you're not being true to yourself more than likely. So it's a, I try to keep an ear to the people out there that allow us to do what we do. But at the same time, you can only do so much of that because, I mean, I'm a one-trick pony. I can't believe I'm still allowed to do this shit. I'm a one-trick pony. I mean, my range is about that big. I don't have some, there's no Jeff Tate crap going on here. There's no.
That range is even smaller because you're missing the tip there.
I know. Yeah. Don't talk about my tip, man. I'm not my girlfriend, my wife now. Shit.
He's a weird dude.
But the fact that at the end of the day, I'm only going to be able to do what I do. Mm-hmm. And that goes not just with just vocally, not just with what comes out of my mouth hole, but it's also just the writing and the style of the writing and everything. I've never been... I've never been one like Iron Maiden, like Bruce, like James Hetfield, and that can take like a subject like in history or subject matter and write a song about it. I've always just written when I hear a riff that catches my interest, CJ, or depending on the band, whether it's CJ or whether it's Adam, or throws a riff at me, or Stevie, and it's like whatever's going on in life at that point in time is what comes out lyrically. And so, you know, if someone didn't like what it was, it isn't like I could really change it, 'cause I'm pretty limited in what I do.
I want to ask you this because I know you've done 10 million interviews in your career and you've probably been asked this question a million times, but when I go around poking for stuff, I'm not finding, unless I'm missing it, bro, I'm not finding what feels like definitive answers. Like, aside from the cliche irreconcilable differences, what really happened? What really happened, dude? Because when I hear irreconcilable differences, all I hear is somebody fucked somebody's girl or someone's ego is just out of control. It's one of the two. And so what I'm trying to understand is what happened with Soil and what happened with Drowning Pool? And then what was the process to patching those things up?
The issues that were there before were no longer there.
Is that a person?
Well, you look at the changes between when I was there originally and when I was there this time.
Right.
To be fair, that's, yeah. And there were issues before the band ever got signed. there were personality conflicts before the band ever got signed. There was, before we went and did one demo with a producer. Well, we decided to do one more demo. I got talked into to do one more demo because I left. We were at a rehearsal that almost went south in a bad way, like in a physical confrontation way. And I packed up my truck and up in Chicago because I was from, as you said, Muncie, Indiana. I was from that area. I was born in Muncie, but I lived in a town called Dunkirk, or from a town called Dunkirk. I had my truck packed up, and at that point in time, I was living in a garage. I was living in a garage in Chicago. I woke up in Chicago summers and Chicago winters, so it was between waking up in a puddle of your own sweat and waking up and scraping frozen saliva off the side of your face. Did that for 3 years. So when I had it, when enough was enough, man, I was done. But I got talked in to do one more demo, and that was the demo that we did with Johnny Kay, and that had Halo and My Own and Need to Feel on it, and everything popped. But we held it together for two records there. But after a while, it was very much, I'm a small town guy, man. I grew up, you talk about how small Muncie was, the town that I actually was born in, that I was raised in. My entire childhood was way smaller than that. You're talking 3,000 population, one cop car, one stoplight. I'm very simple, very simple person. And the type of people that you had to deal with industry-wise, the industry is, you guys know, the industry is not pretty at all. So the people that I had to deal with industry-wise, as well as the personalities within the band itself, was they wore on my simple ways. And I've always believed in saying what's up and being able to fall back on the fact that whatever was said was yeah, I'm rambling on, but yeah, it was personality thing. But for me it wasn't just the band, it was also just the industry itself. Because when I walked away, when I walked away from Soil, there was, even from the label that we were on, there were so many different opportunities that came about from bands and from like different labels got a hold of me for like wanting me to write with some of their baby bands that they were signing. And there was a couple opportunities to sing for different projects that guys that I was friends with in the band stuff were putting together, and as well as established bands that were looking for singers at the time. But I was just so burnt out from it all that I didn't have any, it was just nothing interested me. So it was, I don't blame it on one person. It was just a personality conflict. And at the end of the day, be fair. And so I don't want to come across the wrong way. It was personality conflict. And, as much as I can say it was this, that, because of that person, I'm sure they could look at me and go, that country bumpkin was fucking hard to deal with. So,
right. But I imagine the process of going, like, it doesn't happen a lot in music, right? It happens. Vince Neil, Steve Perry, Bruce from Iron Maiden. Like, it happens where they leave and come back. Not a lot of instances of people that leave two different bands and go back. And I, like, when I think about that, to me, it's like harder than going back to an ex-wife, because you got three ex-wives you got to patch up with, right? In each band. It's like you got to put your arms around the drummer. Now you got to kiss and make up with the guitarist. And fuck.
I think the best thing about when we got back together, Drowning Pool wise, is that it had been so long that nobody could remember why we split up.
That's always the best. That's the best.
That's the last conversation. That it was me and CJ actually that had the conversation. It was like the last conversation that was had before we split, before we went our separate ways. And it, I swear to God, we were laughing about it because it was like, man, kind of feel like you're burnt a little bit. Yeah, I am, blah, blah, blah. How about we should just take a, just take a little bit off, just take a little time off. And it was like, yeah, I agree. So that's it, man. We're just going to take a little time off. And then the next thing you know, it's like 12, 13 years later, and it's, hey, man, do you feel like going and doing some shows? All right, sure. And that's really as simple as it was. It was just kind of like, hey, would you mind?
Is that the most guys being guys statement ever? Like, I just forgot why we were mad, so we said, fuck it.
Yeah, it was. Stevie started messaging me one night, and Stevie is straight up Texas. If you're familiar with people from Texas, he is straight Texas. No small talk. No, he's just straight to the point, and you know, no nonsense. So he started texting me one night, and all of a sudden it becomes a conversation of small talk. And I'm just like, what the hell's going on? And so finally, about an hour of, I was like, dude, you sure everything's all right? Because usually Stevie and I, through the years, we'd only like get a hold of each other if there was something going on in the football world. And finally he was like, yeah, man, everything's cool. He goes, well, actually, I was wondering if you'd be interested in getting together for some reunion shows. And I was like, you know, without even thinking, I was like, oh, hey, hell yeah, let's do that. And then a couple of days later, their manager at the time got a hold of me, and it was just like the reunion shows is whatever. It's like, now the band's back together. So I was like, okay, that's cool.
I got to imagine, though, like a lot of that had to do with we also went through COVID as well. So, and you weren't in the United States when COVID happened, right?
Right. Yeah. I've lived in England for, this will be my seventh year I've lived in England. Yeah.
So you had to have some cabin fever. So I can imagine the first calling that happens, you're like, yeah, which I'm there. What yeah. Today? Yeah, I can be there yesterday. I'm on my way.
You hang up and you go, who the hell was that? You know, who just called?
I don't know. I got plans.
Right. No. Oh, shit. I am screwing this thing up big time. There you are. No, what the hell's going on here?
I don't know. There you are.
But you don't even know what I did. You're so small. Okay, there
old,
we go.
Old hey. Guy with technology. Hey. Okay, that's all right.
That's the story of my life. You're so. What was I thinking about right before I just screwed up my phone?
We were talking
about the COVID thing. Yeah, the COVID thing was real tough because I'd been married to my wife there who lives in England. The reason I live in England and been married, you know, for a very short period of time, just for a couple of years there before COVID hit. So all of a sudden when it did hit, it was kind of like we're getting into it. And she's looking at me going, you know, when we first got together, you were touring all the time and we didn't see a lot of each other. You leaving sometime soon? You know, she's like looking at her watch. And frankly, I'm looking back and I'm like, you know, I haven't woken up in the same place this many days in a row in my adult life. So I was definitely feeling it as well. So, you know, you're right. I mean, they could have been calling, like trying to get the mamas and papas back together and made the wrong fucking phone call. And I've been like, yeah, I'm in, whatever. Let's do it.
How many pro athletes have said that, right? When they come back from retirement, it's like, I'm going to retire early because I miss the family and I want to spend time with them. And then they're at home for a year and it's like, they didn't like me that much. So I'm right. Coming back.
That's exactly right. I'm really getting sick of seeing you.
You're right. I want to dive in a little bit on the differences, the contrasts between Drowning Pool and Soil, because on the surface, you know, similar concepts, but I mean, when you think about it, both bands have gone through several singers, right? And they've had different voices. And oftentimes your lead singer is also your songwriter. So it would stand to reason that over the course of 20 years or 20 plus years, that different albums, different songs are often going to feel very different thematically because they've come from different people. Right. But for me, and maybe this is just me, when I listen to Drowning Pool, whatever album it is, I feel like there's this common thread. And I'm not saying every song, but I'm saying there's a common thread of isolation, alienation, maybe mental struggles. When I listen to Soil thematically, it feels a lot more like interpersonal relationships and sometimes how those things suck. Am I out to lunch or is there a thematic difference with the bands? And when you're writing a song, do you think to yourself instantly, oh, this is a Soil song, or this is definitely a fucking Drowning Pool song?
No, because I've never been able to write music. I'm a straight up lyricist. So for me, I've been lucky enough to have been in bands with talented musicians like DJ and Stevie and Mike with drowning pool or Adam and Tim with Soil. I've been lucky enough to be in bands that there were, when it comes to the music aspect, there've been very talented musicians involved that that threw stuff to me or threw stuff at me that got my wheels turning and got my creative juices going. And then from there it was always, and also not just talented musicians, but talented musicians with open enough minds to understand that it's a group project, it's a group effort. And so that in both of those situations, both bands were always the main songwriters, maybe the main songwriters, but they also understood that everybody brought something to the table, and they weren't the type of songwriters that it had to be their way or the highway. So by the time the song was, you know, you might get presented the song idea by one of the guys, but by the time everybody did their thing to it, it, you know, you could still hold on to some aspects of the original, but it was, you know, it was a completely different thing because everybody had to put their own flavor on it. So I've been blessed being with those type of guys. So now, lyrically speaking, though, like for me personally, I can look at my writing lyrics and be like, thank God it took me a couple of decades to find a good woman, because I got a lot of good songs out of some shitty relationships or some fucked up, you know, childhood crap. And even though
new metal is not conducive to I'm slack. Right? Like it doesn't work, man.
No, I'd actually been out of a relationship. It was the relationship I was in when Soil did the album Hole. I lived with a girl. We lived together for about 5 years when that album came about, and it was a couple of years after we'd split up. She got a hold of me and she was like, I just listened to the album Hole. She was for the first time, beginning to the end. She was like, man, you really didn't like me very much, did you?
Wow. And then the correct answer was like, wow, a little presumptuous that you thought it was about you, huh? The fuck,
bitch.
here's my question, because you've been doing this long enough and you've been writing, and you say lyrically that's your jam, and you mentioned somebody earlier, and you mentioned a few singers that I really enjoy as well. Bruce Dickinson, one of the, like, amazing, unbelievable. But you talk about Jeff Tate. Jeff Tate, I mean, for those that don't know, lead singer of Queensryche or whatever, and one of the greatest albums, in my opinion, for myself, one of my favorites, right, has always been Operation Mindcrime. One of the greatest albums out there and whatnot. But my question to you is, how come you haven't done a concept album yet?
I don't know. I got no answer.
But is it not the most metal thing to do? You know what I mean? Because it was at one time.
I've got nothing good for you, because I mean, as you guys already know, you can ask me a question and I'll spend 17 minutes answering the wrong question. But no, I have no good one with that one. That would be that. Nope, I haven't.
No. All right. Nope. Well, I want full
on the bucket list.
I want full credits when it happens, when you're sitting around next time. Yeah. Going, shit, you know what? We're going to do a concept album.
CJ would be the one to write one too. Yeah. We'd sit. He'd grab a couple bottles of wine and me a couple bottles of vodka, and we kick something out pretty quick.
Because metal hasn't had a good concept album in quite some time, dude.
In a minute.
Huh. Yeah, I'm not
got the wheels turning.
Well, I'm trying to decide whether I even want to mention that to CJ or not. Just like a concept album, he would do like a concept discography. I mean, it would have its own. There would be a whole nother branch to the drowning pool tree, and that thing looks like a bush anyway. But there would be another branch to
the shrub.
Yeah, right. It would have like a whole nother branch with seedlings that grew other trees and shit, and that would be the concept.
You'd end up like the guys in Sabotage. You know, yeah, what I mean? You end up doing Trans-Siberian afterwards, and then you're like, right, what's going on all of a sudden?
Ryan, you know, guys in our general age bracket, and I'm not counting Tid because he's much older, but guys in our general age bracket, when they were growing up, and I'm guessing it was the same for you in a small, small town, and me, I grew up in a city, but I experienced this too. If you were a fan of one genre of music, specifically if you liked rock or metal and you're going through those awkward teen years, there was a lot of voices from peers of, well, fuck that, like, you know, soft rock shit, and fuck that pop music, and fuck country, and fuck everything. And I feel like there was this very toxic, like, gatekeep. And then even within, like, for example, the metal world, right? Then there was like the subgenres within metal, and then people would really be gatekeepy and fucking weird. Two-part question. One, was that your experience growing up, where people were really fucking toxic about every other genre of music if they were really into rock and metal? And do you see a difference in either your own musical taste today, not necessarily what you want to play, but what you'll listen to, or people around you, or like, where are you at with that?
I think you're absolutely right. And when I was younger, I think, because I paid more attention to it, and it was more,
right,
you know, you kind of find your niche when you're younger. I think maybe more so. Now, mine was always really, what I listened to at home was different than what people knew I was listening to as far as the people around me outside of my home. Because my dad, I was really blessed with the family that I grew up in. My parents were friggin' awesome. And my dad was like one of the five head supervisors of a glass factory that like employed everybody in every county around. So my mom was a school teacher.
That's wild.
So I grew up as Mike and Susie's boy, you know, oh, it's Mike and Susie's boy. And so I was very blessed with the incredible parents that I had. And, but what people didn't know is that when you know, after dinner rolled around, when the front door of the McCombs house closed, that my dad strategically had placed in four corners of the front room these huge stereo speakers that were all wired to a speaker, to a whole stereo system that was kind of like behind closed doors in a side room. And when that big giant front door closed to the front of the house, Dad had that stereo going on, and there was everything from AC/DC to Aerosmith to Creedence Clearwater to the Beatles to Bob Dylan to Pink Floyd to Grateful Dead and Rolling Stones going on in the house. And my brother was 5 years older than me, so my brother was, he got into the whole Motley Crue years and the Guns N' Roses and Poison and Wasp and all that. And so I grew up with that as much as I did all the stuff my dad listened to. So I grew up with a wide variety of stuff. And it wasn't until then I got a little bit older that I kind of found my way in with the Alice in Chains and Metallica and stuff. And so I grew up with just a big, wide variety of music. But of course, as far as the people outside knew, it was the Metallica shirt and the black skinny jeans. but no. So yeah, I see exactly what you're saying. You and that was my niche in school. Those were my guy. Nowadays, for my own, nowadays I respect and I appreciate the fact that there's a style of music out there that hits home. Regardless of what, you know, hits home for every mood that you're in. You know, there's times when Run to the Hills just ain't gonna, it's not gonna be the tune you need to hear at that moment.
Right.
And maybe, yeah, you know, and I don't want to dash anybody's thoughts or anything, but maybe a little, you know, maybe a track from Mumford and Sons is something you need to friggin' hear at that moment in time, or something off the original Book of Shadows from Zakk Wylde, or just, you know, the
pull.
Rain and Blood ain't always going to be the mood setter for you. Right. So you need something else that can say what's on your heart at the moment. And the beautiful thing about music is when someone's out there saying it. So
I like the fact that today it doesn't feel quite as toxic as it did. Because when I was a kid in high school, I was the weird kid who loved heavy metal, but also loved hip hop. And, you know, like people would look at me like, hey, pick a side, motherfucker. You know, that was literally, you know, the attitude I got. I was in a very multicultural school and all the metalheads hung out in one hallway and all the black kids hung out in another hallway. And they're like, yo, you with us or you with them? I'd be like, I'll sit at your lunch table today and tomorrow I'll sit with them.
It's but funny.
Like, today, my Spotify playlist, it looks like it was made by 30 different people. Like, it's ridiculous, you know, because right. my musical taste is all over the place, you know. But I think that's okay. Like, I'm so tired of these people who are like, oh, I like heavy metal, not nu metal. Oh, I like grindcore. I like, you know, horrorcore. It's like, fuck off, you know, like.
My wife had some friends over to the house. This is a couple of years. It's like shortly after COVID or maybe before. I don't know. We know how COVID screwed up everybody's timeline, but it was a couple of years ago, and it was her friend and her new boyfriend, and he was really big into doom metal, which I thought I knew what doom was until spending 2 hours with this guy. And he's breaking down the genre of doom metal into like 375 different subcategories of doom metal.
Oh my God.
Dude,
it's too much. It's too much.
Each their own, man. And that's a beautiful, again, we just hit it a second ago. That's a beautiful thing about music is there's something out there for everybody.
Yeah.
But man,
yeah.
I don't give a shit what you say. There's not 375 subcategories of doom metal.
It's northeastern Norwegian didn't burn a church down doom metal. Yeah, listen, at the end of the day, Hank Williams III does a set on all of it. Like, it doesn't matter. He does the country, he does the rock, he does the rockabilly, he does the doom stuff. He's got it all covered. So, you know, just check out Hank III.
all that being said, Ryan, I want to, if you have that link handy that one of our listeners sent in.
I don't.
You do. You just don't want to play it for.
I don't. I absolutely don't.
I posted a question yesterday on Instagram, Ryan. I said, hey, Ryan McComb's going to be joining us. If you have questions, let us know. And one person, name is Stephanie, sent this in. And she said, please ask him if he has heard this remix of Bodies featuring Megan Thee Stallion. I don't know that you've ever heard this. Tid and I heard it, and we both said, oh, this is not good. Oh, but we wanted to get your take on it. So, I wanted to get Tid. Tid is against this whole idea, but we're going to play this for you. It's on SoundCloud, and it's made by Thought-ish.
Yeah, well, okay. we know what thought.
Okay, let's give this a peek. And then you can just wait when you've had enough, Ryan. Canvas.
Okay, listen. Here's the thing. You know what this sounds like to me? It sounds like it should be on the soundtrack of a really confused TV show.
Confused TV show?
Yeah, I don't like the. It's slow. it puts me to sleep. It's like it's drowning pool played over the top of a sex scene.
That's what it is.
On a CW program.
Everybody's on methadone.
Right.
You know, I would like to be as politically correct as or I really appreciate somebody taking the time to
sure
to put that sure. together.
And, yeah.
So, yeah, I wish them all the luck in the world.
Okay, now we're off air. Tell us what you really think.
Yeah. I think that you know, to be a part of a band that to be a member of a band that did a song that has stretched the years as man, there's got to be some way I can get out of this. What the fuck?
Do you ever get sick of playing Bodies?
No, I don't. Dave was a good friend, and in any time I get the opportunity, I didn't know. That was when the guys came to me back in 2005 about getting in the band. I wasn't sure about it just because I felt like I was stepping on Dave's toes, you know. Okay. And it wasn't until his mom actually called me, and I had just gotten I'd flown to Dallas and jammed with the guys, and I was back home in Indiana where I was living at the time. And Joe, his mom, called me, and she was like, "Where are you at?" I was like, "I'm in Indiana." And she goes, "Well, Joe's friend, or Dave had a friend. He rehearses right underneath Drowning Pool's rehearsal spot." And she goes, and he said, he called me and he said that there was some, that they were rehearsing this past weekend, and the singer sounded just like that Ryan McCombs from Soil. And she goes, "So I was just calling to see where you were." And I said, I'm in Indiana, Joe." At this time, I was in my car, so I'd pulled over to take the call. And he goes, "Well, I just want you to know, if case it might have been you or could be you someday or whatever," she goes, "I just want you to know that if anybody was going to do it, David wanted to be you."
Wow.
And so when Mama Williams said that, it was a go. So for me to get back to your question, for me to be back doing that stuff, to doing those songs again, Tear Away and Sinner. And we added a song that guys haven't done. Cause I heard, when I was getting ready to do the Drowning Pool set again, I'm walking around England, listening to the songs again, trying to remember the lyrics. And, and I came across like the song Mute from that album and stuff. And
great got a song. Whole
guys, I was like, "Man, can we do that? I love the groove of that song. I love the vibe of
yeah.
it."
Yeah.
And that'd be awesome. I haven't played that since we did it with Dave. And so, but just anytime I get to do songs from that era in particularly, it's special because it's Dave's, you know, and it's an opportunity. He'll always live in our hearts. And then I love the guy just for the time that we spent together at festivals and on tours to, you know, at shows and stuff together. We just hit it off from that crap. So when I say in our hearts, I don't want to make it sound like that. I mean, those dudes, Stevie, Mikey, you know, that those guys, that's a whole another level. But for me, just because of David being the type of person that he was, he hit me. So he struck, we just instantly, whatever. So to be a part of being able to keep those songs alive, to be a little piece of still carrying that. Because in a way for me, it's keeping him, you know, it's keeping him in people's ears and keeping his, cause they're his words, you know, it's his heart. It's an opportunity for me to keep him here.
Contrastly, when you sing songs that Jason wrote, right, the previous singer in the band, when you left the first time, I'm assuming there's not this like emotional feeling because, like, you know, he's still around and he's just doing other things. But is it possible to sing Dave Williams songs without getting emotional? And if so, at what point did that stop happening?
I'm definitely not being able to do them again has definitely opened up a whole nother appreciation. But I'm not sure if I followed directly, but I do know that within my first run of it, I was so in love with everything I just said to you, you know, being a part of it and stuff. But then as the years went on, I did lose some of that. You know, you're doing shows a week, you know, you're doing five to six shows a week, every friggin' week, you know, and after 5-6 years of it, you know, you start to, I did. Maybe someone else would have been better, but I started to lose that hold on, you know, it was more, I don't know how to describe it, man. I lost a little bit of grasp on the importance of the shoes that I wasn't standing in his shoes. I was trying to bring a good pair of my own, I think I lost sight of the importance of what I was being allowed to do, and I appreciate that now more, I think, or I should say I appreciate it again as much as I did at the beginning, if not more, because mm-hmm. Us getting back together, I don't think was on anybody's radar 2 years ago, so you know all of a sudden it happened, and I'm able to take that stage again, and I'm able to go up there and sing Tear Away. And I know what that song meant to Dave. He's told me about it. We've talked about it. I've heard the other guys talk about when they were writing that song. I've been there for those conversations. I know what the song meant, but I also know what those lyrics mean to me. You know, everything happens for reasons I just don't know. You know, do I really want this? Sometimes I scare myself. I just can't let you go. You know, there's lyrics in that song that, as me being a friend to the person who originally sang that, it's a whole nother emotional perspective for me.
Right.
If it all ends tomorrow, being able to get back up on stage with those guys and doing these songs again has been a blessing for me in my career.
What it's done, in my opinion, is it's made you a fan all over again, if I can, you know what I mean, of those lyrics again, because you have a whole new perspective for it, and you have the enjoyment now of being able to see it from a different light, like everybody does. That's the beautiful thing about music, is you can hear lyrics and you can always find some kind of relatable way to what those lyrics mean. You know what I mean? That's what songwriting is all about. I mean, let's face it. And you're playing it not only in some of these smaller venues, you know what I mean, as well as like these festivals, these massive festivals that have just got to be the coolest thing in the world for you guys. Again, you have one coming up. I know that you guys are playing the big one in Columbus, the Sonic Temple one. Is there a festival yet that you haven't played that you're like, man, I got to get this one off of my checklist, that I really want to play this one?
Lilith
Fair.
Took the word out of my mouth, man. Between the two bands, there isn't Rock and Rio.
Okay.
I haven't played that one. And maybe, I don't know. Maybe there's like a little, since I've lived in England for 7 years now, there's like a little piece of me that thinks doing like Glastonbury sometime might be cool or something, but I'm not sure exactly how we'd fit into that whole weird little thing.
Yeah.
But,
round hole, let's go.
If Skindred can do it, they can bring us along. Come on, we'll do it.
Right. I want to ask you a question that's a little bit off. Sorry, I think you were cutting out there for a sec. I think I might have jumped over you and we didn't get what you were saying.
Oh, I've been blessed to do pretty much every festival I can think of. I've gotten to do, and you mentioned Sonic Temple this year, but we're also doing the Louder Than Life in Kentucky and the Welcome to Rockville down in Florida and Aftershock in California. And we got invited to all those DWP festivals this summer, so that's gonna be awesome, because it's like a big family reunion backstage, just getting to see bands that you've shared time with over through the years and who guys you've gotten to work with and stuff over the years. Just kind of like catch up with everybody, see how everybody's families are doing stuff. So looking forward to that.
That's the best. I'm going to go out on a limb here. Totally different line of questioning. And I really want to ask this question because I feel like most people I've known in the metal world, they fit into a certain stereotype of things they like. Do you like horror? Are you a horror film guy? You're not.
Nope.
Okay. So you're not part of that that stereotype of metal guys and they love their slasher films.
No, I couldn't. If you notice how quickly I answered that. No, that I do not have any tolerance for that. We were, I think I get confused sometimes, but I think it was Soil that was on the Saw 2 soundtrack or something like that.
Yeah. And you never saw it.
No, I went to the theater to go see it. And before that, I was okay with horror films. And that's not necessarily a horror film. It's more of a make you tense up and ruin your day type film. Yeah. And that's what it did to me. I remember leaving the theater and I had been so tense watching that movie that I physically felt like I'd been in a car wreck. And I was like, never again am I paying money to feel this way. So like the last time I went to watch a movie that was even close to the horror genre, I'd rather have some laughs. I'd rather go watch some stupid comedy than some like World War II drama or something than watch a horror movie.
I'm with you. I'm not a huge horror guy myself. Tid loves that genre. He loves it to death. I'm not huge there, but there is a franchise that I am partial to, and that's the original Nightmare on Elm Street franchise. I love that shit. And the whole reason I mentioned this is because right before we went on air, I saw a story that came down that said there is a new prequel TV series about Freddy Krueger that's coming out in October, directed by Rob Zombie.
Yeah.
And the kid, the skinny dorky kid from Road Trip, is playing Freddy. DJ Qualls, the 100-pound dork from that film, is playing Freddy. And I looked at this, I go, is Zombie doing a comedy? It's either going to be brilliant casting or it's going to be ridiculous casting, and I'm not sure yet.
Oh, that the casting definitely makes you wonder, but good for him. I haven't seen it. So it's good when us old timers get a job. Damn it!
It just when I saw that story, man. Like, hang on, I got a picture here. Can we? I want to put this up on the screen for a quick second, Tid. That's Freddy Krueger.
Yeah. I don't know if I have the heart to tell you or not, Donnie. You got interneted. That's not a real story.
It's not a real story?
No, you got interneted. That's from like a couple of months ago even, because I looked into that as well. This is a new thing going around the internet, old man, is they're putting up Rob Zombie is coming out with these new movies. You dirt farmer. What's the matter with you?
I literally had it come across on a news app on my phone right before the show. Amazing. A legit news app.
I love it. I love it. I love everything about this fucking internet world that us old people live in now. It's great.
God damn it. I'm out. Fuck this.
That would have been some good cast.
I'm saying.
I know. I was like, shit, I'm going to settle in for this. Before we go, I want to ask you this, Ryan, because you're a veteran of the industry and you've been doing this for a long time. In your opinion, what do young musicians today that are coming up, what do they get wrong and what are they not willing to hear?
Man, I don't know. The thing that I see more and more, or I was seeing it more and more here in the States, and I started promoting shows over in the UK, and I was actually very happy to see that there was what I'm getting ready to talk about was starting was happening over there. I was privileged. I was lucky. I should say that I was lucky enough to, and Soil was lucky enough to be a part of the Chicago scene when we were, and at that point in time. And this goes true with every scene that there's ever been. There, L.A. wasn't some magical place. Seattle wasn't some magical place. New York wasn't some magical place. Chicago wasn't a magical place. It was the bands in those places at the time that it happened, that those scenes became scenes, that those bands working together and pulling for each other. And there wasn't this cutthroat. And I can't say, I mean, I saw Decline and Fall of the Western Civilization in the metal years, you know. I'm not so sure there wasn't some cutthroat shit going on in L.A. back in the day, so I maybe shouldn't use that as a reference. But when you think about Seattle, I think it's the same thing can be said, that the scene was strong because the bands worked together. Right. When we were on a show and there was a band couldn't make it, we were on the fan with like Dan or David being like, you know, hey, can you guys get here? Can you guys get here? You know, fill the slot. Or they would do this same thing for us. You had 5.0, you had From Zero, you had Loudmouth, you had a bunch of bands right there in the Chicago scene that made that scene healthy because we weren't worried about whether we had the coolest gear or the newest gear. Or we weren't worried about the trivial bullshit. We were pulling for each other because we were smart enough to understand that if one person could get through the doorway, they would kick that door open and as many of us would run through it as possible. So now that can't necessarily be said today because it is a completely different world today that we live in when it comes to the music industry. I mean, it doesn't even resemble anywhere near the same monster that it was. So I wouldn't even know where to tell someone to begin today. And that I hate to say that because I don't want to sound like it's doom and gloom. I'm just saying that me personally, I wouldn't know where to begin today. I wouldn't know where to start because back in the day, you beat the streets and you sat outside the music venues after a show and you handed out flyers or CD singles or whatever you had you just tried to get your name out there and you tried to get on shows and you tried to get in the scene that then you could build a good scene out of. Today, I don't even know. I don't know where I'd begin to tell a band how to get going. And I hate that because I don't want anybody to get discouraged. Because if it's in you, if the music bug's bitten you, you're gonna just you gotta do it. I don't know. And I know I just took your question and went the wrong direction with it again, and I apologize. I was lucky enough to. Because I've shared stages with musicians back then as well. I shared the stage with musicians back then that were a hell of a lot more talented than I was, that just never got the break. That never got they weren't in the right place at the right time. And regretfully, that's a lot of it. There's a whole lot of shit you can do to make sure and hedge your bet. To make sure that you're that guy that's in the right place at the right time, or that you can better your odds of being that right guy in the right place. But at the end of the day, man, there's a lot of just trying to do everything you can do to make sure the scene you're in is healthy and that you're pulling attention that way. At least that's the way it was for us back then.
Is there more pressure? Is there more pressure because you're a front man of the band, and you know, we all know that there is a certain image that comes along with being able to kick those doors in, especially with the record companies, because they're looking for something. They're looking for something special. And I mean, let's face facts. It's never the drummer.
Okay? I wasn't.
Right. But you understand what I'm saying? Like your look has changed as you've gotten older. You know what I mean? But you've always had this, like this Southern flair to you. you know, for if I can use that, right? You've had this, like, this Lynyrd Skynyrd, Allman Brothers, you know, very, very, you know what I mean? And I mean this in the highest regard, because I love everything about Southern rock, right? Like, that.
What the labels were looking for back then was not me. That's right. All I know. Because when you think about, like, the only thing that has changed about my look is weight. Weight and the beard isn't just the Abraham Lincoln thing anymore. It's came with a little mustache to join the party. Other than that, it's still, I was walking down the street one time going to a Soil show before we got signed in Chicago. I'm walking down the street and I hear somebody going, Greg. And I'm walking because my name ain't fucking Greg, so I'm not turning around. And finally, the guy comes up and he grabs me by the shoulder and he goes, Oh, I thought you were Greg Allman.
Amazing. Fucking amazing, right?
So, but I can tell you without a doubt that I don't know what the industry was looking for. And you're absolutely right. It's so often it is that front man having a look, having a way about them that is part of the mystique of the band that draws the attention of the label. In my case, the label didn't like me. The label didn't like my look. The label, you got to think of when Soil came out, Metallica cut their hair off, and it was a different moment. It was a weird moment. And the label didn't like my long hair. They didn't like my beard. They didn't like a lot of shit about me. They didn't like my, I don't think they liked my flat Billy accent. They didn't like much to do. And it wasn't until the Redefine album that our A&R person label actually came up to me and goes, for this next record, they didn't like the way I dressed either. They were like, you know, they wanted more flair. And I was, they were like, you can't tell the difference between you and the tech. And I was like, well, fuck it. I'm wearing a goddamn Superman costume up there. That's not anyway, but no, it was right after the album Redefine and the A&R guy came up to me and goes, I just want you to go into this record with this in mind. Whatever you've been doing, whatever you are, whatever, he goes, I don't get it. None of us get it. But if people are connecting to it, just keep being yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm looking at him going, well, good, because I don't know how to be anything else. But no, funny you bring that up. No, you're absolutely right. 99.9% of the time, that the singer had to carry a certain amount of flair or something with it to garner the attention of the label, as well, because the label thought that's what it was going to take to garner the attention of the fan out there. But and they did not think I had it. They didn't think, and I still agree with them. But he came up to me. I remember that conversation. Whatever you've been doing, just keep on doing it. We don't get it, but evidently you are. So,
It reminds me of Eddie Murphy's great comedy album Raw, when he said Bill Cosby called him on the phone and said, "You cannot curse and you cannot talk like this." And then he spoke to Richard Pryor, and Richard Pryor said, "Do the people laugh when you say that shit? Then fucking do that shit." And that was it. That's the best advice ever.
Tom, shut the fuck up.
Yeah, shut the fuck up. Listen, this has been a lot of fun. Can you do us a favor? Next week, can you put on a different outfit and come back on the show and do the interview as Greg Allman?
No. I lost all of that for, like, change the outfit and come on the show as Greg Allman.
You had the right answer no matter what. It was absolutely the correct answer. No. Anytime Donnie says, hey, let me ask you a question, the correct answer is no.
You got $5?
No. Amazing.
Brian McCombs, thank you so much for your time, man. It's been a lot of fun. If people want to get at you, if they want to find out more about the tour, where should they go?
Dude, probably the safest bet, as you know, we've got the drowningpool.com and drowningpool. Perfect. Whatever. It all takes you to the same Drowning Pool website. But also, you know, Facebook is, everybody's on the damn thing anyway. So just go over there to the official Drowning Pool site and everything you need to know tour wise and merch, whatever the hell you need to know about Drowning Pool, it's all on there. Now I've got my own Ryan McCombs official page for my own bull crap. So yeah, it's all there. It's all gettable.
I like the way that you constantly put yourself over. You're just like, get out there and get some. You're no, whatever. If you find it, you fucking find it. If I'm around, what? I don't know. Dude, like, you are just as old as I am.
Get off my lawn. A
publisher's exactly. Nightmare. Exactly.
We will post the links on godfathersofpodcasting.com in case you're looking for shit. We'll get it all up there for you. Thanks so much, man. Appreciate your time.
Thank you guys for your time, man. It's so much. And, you know, keeping the metal world connected. It's much appreciated. Thank you guys.
All right. It's our pleasure. There he goes, ladies and gentlemen. Ryan McCombs, lead singer of not one, but two bands, Ted. Two bands.
Yeah, pretty cool that he took out the time to talk to us two schlubs. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Dude, you know, living a rock and roll lifestyle. And he's like, you know what I want to do? I want to talk to these two assholes for an hour of my life that I'll never fucking get back.
I want to take time out from making the sex, as he said.
Unbelievable.
I'm going to use forever. I'm never going to stop using that.
Well, I mean, thankfully, you only have to say it to yourself.
Wow, you're stiff. Something your wife never says.
No, not at this age. Bro, I told you, retirement community. Foo-foo! I'm waiting to have that appointment with the doctor.
You can't roast Tid. He's unroastable. It's so fucking annoying. Anything you want to plug before we go?
I mean, no, the usual stuff. You know what to do. Follow all of this stuff. Hit that like, hit that share, hit that subscribe. Wherever you find this, share it with all of your friends. Do what you got to do. All of my other stuff is, you know, like it says right there, at Notorious TID. Be sure to check out Live Audio Wrestling, The Law. You can check it out on YouTube. You can check it out on all of your podcast providers, as well as on SNME Radio, where you can also check out the host of this show, Donnie Da Silva, as he's made his return over there with Boris on the Sunday night's main event program that's also available on some of the TSN things across Canada. So if you're in one of those markets that gets it there, absolutely, kudos. But go to the SNME Sunday night's main event on the internet, and you can find out all of that information as well. And that's the last plug.
If you want to listen to me on terrestrial radio, it's a lot like this without the swearing. It's
boring.
And we're just talking about professional wrestling on Sunday night's main event. We'll be doing another one this Sunday at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. And I will be doing a one-on-one interview with our longtime friend, former WWE referee Jimmy Corderas. He was at WrestleMania weekend, taking in the festivities, catching up with old pals. And Jimmy is always a pleasure to chat with. So I'll be sitting down with him, and we'll be presenting that for everyone this Sunday at 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. That's it for me. On behalf of Notorious TID, my name is Donnie Da Silva. Thank you so much to Ryan McCombs. Thank you to O'Donnell Media for brokering that interview and always being so supportive of this program. Go to godfathersofpodcasting.com. You can email us info@godfathersofpodcasting.com and give us your thoughts, your feedback, whatever you like. Till next time, keep your stick on the ice and keep your fucking head up.
Deuces.
Fuck this shit, I'm out. Mm-mm. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
No thanks.
Don't mind me. I'ma just grab my stuff and leave. Excuse me, please. Fuck this shit, I'm out.
Nope.
Fuck this shit, I'm out.
All right then.
I don't know what the fuck just happened, but I don't really care. I'ma get the fuck up out of here.